All right, everyone, welcome back to the Psych and Theo podcast. Sam and Tim here, ready for another great to discuss.
We got a good one today.
Oh, everyone's going to love this one. This one, you want to share with your friends, share with your family, share with everyone that you know, because you're going to encounter maybe some differences on this aspect.
I would wager that every single person has felt what we're going to talk about today.
Every single person has felt this. Maybe you've had this conversation. Most likely you've had this conversation, but maybe it hasn't sounded in the way that we're going to discuss today.
I would go even further and say every single person has asked a question about this in their life, like an introspective question. Mm-hmm. Every single person. And if they say, no, I haven't, you're lying. And I'm going to bring you up on church discipline.
Right. Oh man. So what is this topic that we're going to be discussing that everyone should know? I wonder if you guys could guess it.
Well, if they've clicked on the episode, they'll see the title. Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
We already gave you the answer. Yeah. Sorry. Random moment.
Do we have a soulmate?
Yeah. That's probably what made you click on this episode, right?
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. I'm sure. I wonder if this is our big breakout, dude.
It could be.
This could be our shot. This is our 15 minutes of fame that hopefully lasts longer than 15 minutes, because this episode is at least an hour, you know.
And you came prepared, man. I'm looking forward to
it. I'm ready to go off on some things.
Right. You know? So you guys want to listen to this episode.
Yeah. I want to preface some things. I am not coming at this from someone who claims to have found the soulmate. Mm. You know, I am a bachelor. I'm not gonna go on the show. But I am a bachelor. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So
please do, Tim.
No. So I am not speaking. I want to be careful not to be presumptuous and speak about this from a vantage point that I don't have. Hmm. Okay. And Sam, you have your own experiences. I'm sure you could speak to as well on this. So I just want to give our audience that take that I'm very interested in where this concept comes from and what it does to us as human beings, whether you're married or single or not. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very interested in whether there's validity to this concept or not.
Yeah. The concept of soulmate.
Because one of my pet peeves, and here we go, I'm already going off. One of my pet peeves is evangelicals, like we're the worst at dismissing people in our culture who are kind of groping around for meaning in life and grabbing on to these kind of concepts and thinking this is what I need. Evangelicals, we're some of the worst at dismissing those people. And it's almost like just giving these simplistic plastic bumper sticker one size fits all solutions, almost like just slap a Bible verse on it and there, like, I've answered your question, therefore you shouldn't have any other like existential problems now in life, you know. And like, we are the worst for that. Mm-hmm. And so I want to challenge our audience. You might have seen the title of this episode and thought like, well, of course we don't have soulmates, you know. Mm-hmm. that's dumb, or like the Bible doesn't say anything about that or whatever. And I'm going to challenge you that this concept is not as crazy as you think. We're probably going to come down on the same side that you have already concluded, but it's not as crazy as people think. And we should not take such a quick, dismissive view of the concept, because if so many people, as we said, I think every person has asked this question about themselves in their life. Mm-hmm. So that is pointing to something about the human soul.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what the mind is doing. Mm. And so we shouldn't be dismissive of it. If every single person on the planet asks a question like this, maybe it's important to step back and consider how we should think about it, rather than just being like this dismissive, like, well, I don't think there's anything to say about that. Like, man, it's whatever, man. Like,
whatever. Yeah. Yeah. This is not for you.
Yeah. There's only been like hundreds of philosophers throughout thousands of years who've thought about it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so
I'm interested.
Yeah. So, okay, so what do we mean by soulmate? Mm-hmm. All right. Now I'm going to talk a lot here, but if you got questions, interject and stop me. Okay.
Because I do want
you got stuff to say as well.
Yeah. And honestly, I would say this before you start. When we brought up the topic about, you know, is there a soulmate? Like, I knew what I thought about it and what I believed about it, but I didn't scoff at it or think that it was a ridiculous question. It's just more, here's where I stand. But as we were talking, so preparing yourself to have an open mind to the conversation, because that's what happened to me is right now. It's like, have my own thoughts about it. and we'll elaborate as we continue speaking. But there's this openness to it as you hear more and more, you're like, there's some interesting stuff here. So, yeah.
Might you say that I red-pilled you on this concept?
Maybe. Maybe. Let's see
Yeah,
the end of the show. Let's go with this. Yeah.
okay.
Okay.
All right, so the idea of a soulmate, it's this idea that there is someone out there. It is a person or an entity, let's say. There's someone out there that is the perfect fit for me. And by fit, we mean that my connecting with this person on a deep emotional level, romantic level, usually we throw that in there, falling in love with this person, that will give me this lasting, abiding sense of happiness, fulfillment, peace, wholeness to myself. Like I will finally find my purpose in life. Like life can almost begin at that point. Before that connection, I'm sort of struggling in life and I'm kind of groping around in the dark and I can't find my way because I'm missing my soulmate. I'm incomplete in some way. There's some piece of me that's missing. So that's what when the idea of a soulmate comes from, that there's, in all human beings, we feel this sense of something's missing from us and we long for a connection with whatever that is. And philosophers throughout time have had theories about what this is. Okay. So we see this, and we see this come up in culture too, pop culture. You know, even though it's an idea that we can easily dismiss or make fun of or whatever, because we live in a fallen world and we're aware of of broken marriages and broken relationships and things like that. But you see this ideal come up all the time in movies. Okay, ladies, The Notebook. Okay, if you've seen The Notebook, you know what I'm talking about. Like there's these two people that meet when they're young and they go through life and they're separated at certain times and certain circumstances. But they feel there's this like deep connection that transcends all other relationships throughout their entire life. And so that's that idea of soulmate, that and then they finally sort of come together at the end. The Bachelor, the show The Bachelor. Yeah.
That's
I
wild.
want to find the one. Maybe I should go on the show. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe I should audition. Yeah.
Audition
I
for it. I sent
wouldn't
that
make it.
video.
I wouldn't stand a chance.
Well, you never know, man. There's some people on there I'm like, oh, they get it.
Yeah, so The Bachelor and Bachelorette, like one person going through, you know, a litany of people, like a half dozen eggs or 2 dozen egg carton, you know, just cracking one egg after another, trying to find the one that works. Dating apps as well. Dating apps are all about finding the one for you. Well, some of them are like that. Tinder,
I was about to say, I'm like, all of
Tinder is not so much that
them.
way. So some of them have no pretense. They're just like, hey, we're here for hookups. But some of them are like promising that you'll find the one. You'll find that meaning.
Their
Let me give
selling
you
point
some
for sure.
stats. Now you might be thinking like, surely there's not a lot of people who think this. Okay.
That's what I
Brace
thought.
yourself. Okay. So there's a YouGov poll that was conducted 3 years ago. This is 2021. 15,000 US adults were in this survey. Okay.
15,000.
15,000 US adults. 60% of Americans believe in the idea of a soulmate. 6 out of 10. Okay. About a quarter of them say they don't believe in such a concept. So there's 6% that say they do believe it. 25% say they don't. And then 18 are unsure. So 18 are kind of like in the middle. Okay.
That's probably what it was.
64% of women are more likely to believe it than men. So
How many? 64?
64%. So almost 2 in 3 women.
Yeah.
Two out of every 3 women. 55% of men say they believe in a perfect soulmate, a
That's
match.
interesting. I
Yeah.
thought that would be a lot lower.
So you're looking at a population where more than half of the population believes in this idea that I have
What's
a.
the age range? That'd be
Let's
interesting
see. Let's
if
do,
they
do,
have
do,
that.
do. Didn't give me
Has
the
to be
age
adult.
range.
I mean, anything
Yeah,
above
just
18
adults. Yeah,
adults. Yeah.
yeah, yeah. And here's another interesting thing. A person's relationship status actually impacts their belief about this.
Like
Okay.
current.
Yeah. So Americans who are in a what's called a civil partnership, not a marriage, 66% of them. So that's 2 in 3. Two out of every three say that they believe that there's a soulmate, whereas 60% of those in marriage. So it's still pretty high. Like And even in marriages, they say, oh yeah, there's a soulmate. Hopefully they think they're,
The other 40%.
yeah. 50% of singles say that there's a soulmate. And this is what I find the most interesting. 52% of divorcees say there's still a soulmate.
52.
52%. So even people who come from like broken marriages still hold to this idea that there's a soulmate. At least half of them do. I found that pretty like shocking,
Yeah,
honestly. Yeah.
you could be more jaded.
So if you're looking at these stats as a Christian, if you're looking at these stats, we live in a society that is holding on to an idea that's deeply meaningful for them, and they're searching for a connection that they believe they will find in a romantic relationship that will give them this sense of wholeness and meaning and purpose in life. Okay, that's what you need to see in this data, not that we live around a bunch of dummies that holding on to some archaic concept or some overly idealistic romantic thing that surely they just need to grow up. Okay, that's not the conclusion you should draw from this data. The conclusion is that people are looking for something. All of them are looking for something.
But
Okay.
here's the, I guess, something that popped up
Yeah.
as you were mentioning those things. So I don't know if it's just the social side, but if that's the case, well, it's interesting. If those numbers are so high, or since they are so high, you would think that there's a part in there that would ask, why haven't that person been found? Meaning, is the idea that having that idea that there's a soulmate contributing to the lack of success in marriages? Meaning, people will date and they'll say, oh, you know, they were great, but there was this other thing that was just kind of off. So it leads to another relationship. And again, it's that
Oh, okay.
expectation of, is that leading to these broken types of relationships? Is the question that came up for me. I don't know. I mean, as you keep on sharing,
Yeah,
again.
that's interesting. Like the idea itself could be causing broken relationships because it's setting up some sort of idealism in their mind.
There was this
Yeah.
lady who did, she was a reporter, a journalist, and she did like a report on that. And she asked, men, if a girl met 80% of your qualification or things that you would want in a woman, if you met 80%, she met 80% of that, would you marry her, continue on a second date? So this was after a first date.
My first balk at that is, what is the other 20%?
The other 20%. Right. So I don't know what it's what exactly. It's what are those things that are killer.
What's being
So
left out,
the three characteristics that they
you
gave was she has to be cute enough, good conversationalist, and what was the third one? It's
I mean,
escaping
for
me.
Christians, we would say like fundamental beliefs, like faith.
So we would say, I mean, and to your point, we talked about this earlier, like Christians, I think, often say attraction's not that big of a deal. But it is, I think it is a factor. Everyone considers that as a factor,
I
right?
like what I like what years ago I was listening to a sermon series by Matt Chandler on this, and he said physical attraction, it was a sermon series on Song of Solomon actually, and he said physical attraction is a prerequisite for relationships. Like it has to exist, and anyone who claims that it like, oh, I didn't care about that one, like,
It's kind
or
of
like
saying a
you
holier
shouldn't care
than
about that
thou.
because yeah, it's like they're just lying to themselves. Like some like person who's been married 20 years and they're telling a young person like, ah, that's not that important. Like, oh, really? Is that how you approach relationships when you were younger? Like, is that how you chose your wife? Like, you want to tell her that now? Like, you want, would you,
Got me trouble.
please, please, like, call her over here and tell her, please. So yeah, it's, and Jordan Peterson also talks about this too. It's like you have to be like physical attraction is important. So sometimes evangelical, sorry, I'm taking your
No,
airtime.
you're good, man.
Evangelicals often contradict themselves too on this subject. They'll talk about physical attractiveness not being that important, but then they'll talk about the importance of sex and marriage. You can't
That's
have
true.
one without the other.
That's
Like
true.
these two are not, you got to be
There's a lot to
consistent.
be said there too.
Yeah, you got to be consistent. So evangelicals sometimes we tie ourselves in knots. We contradict ourselves because we're afraid of not having the right answer, and it's okay to just not know, but
And the emphasis is highly on, and this is why maybe they downplay the physical attraction part, is because they say with age you start losing attraction. But you know, you mentioned an example earlier. When you're building something together, like you build also attraction along with that. So it's not just the physical attraction, but then you're also emotionally connected, spiritually connected, mentally connected. So all of those
Oh
things
man.
contribute to attraction piece.
Okay, we're slow
But
cooking it. Yeah, we're gonna set it up. Okay, okay,
but
okay, okay. So you were gonna say something, and then I can get into where this idea comes from in history.
Yeah, I think it was just that. So that question came up for me as to, okay, if there is the belief that there's a soulmate, is that a contributing factor to the number of failed relations? Because you'll have some people who will find their top three things in a person, at least for men, whatever that may be, and they'll be okay with that. This reporter asked women the same thing. Would you be okay with 80%? And they said no. And she said, why? And they said, because I'd be settling. So would
Oh,
you be
yeah.
settling if you only had that amount? So
Yeah.
for guys, they take a different approach with that. But again, is that idea of having a soulmate contributing to that? We don't know, because it's also a high number for men, the 50%. So there's a lot to discuss there,
Yeah, Sam, this
essentially.
sounds like a great dissertation research project.
I'll share with you my dissertation
Okay.
idea, and
Audience,
it's
you need
similar
to
to
go
this.
out and comment and say, fam, you need to write your dissertation on this very idea. I would love to see like an intake form where you're trying to decipher, trying to like not trick, but trying to discern if someone believes in the idea without having them come out and explicitly say that they believe in it. Like
Give me more
someone,
ideas, man. I already have so many.
because someone could say, oh no, I don't believe in the idea. And then you ask them other questions and you're like,
They actually do.
you actually do believe in this idea. Yeah. So the self-denial of the soulmate. Oh, the self-denial of the soulmate. Oh
So
man,
cool.
that's a
That's your book.
No, that's your book, my friend.
That's
Okay, so where does this idea come from? Okay, it's not new and it's not crazy. I want people to take that away from this episode. The idea of a soulmate, it's not new and it's not crazy. Okay, it doesn't mean it's right, but it's not new and it's not crazy. Okay, so we need to empathize and sympathize with people who maybe have this longing in their heart and not sure what to do with it. All right, so the main roots of this idea stretch all the way back to Greek philosophy. Now, the term soulmate first popped up. The term actual, like English soulmate, came from a letter written by an English poet named Samuel Taylor Coleridge, in like the early
Not
18.
Samuel Landa.
No, yeah, not Sam Landa. Another great author wrote a lot on the soulmate. If I may speak prophetically about it. Anyway, so 1800s is when this idea in English starts cropping up in poetry and literature. And so you can think like if it's coming in poetry, it's going to be connected to romance and idealism and all these other things. But it goes all the way back to like Greek philosophy. So one of the earliest, so Plato kind of mentions the idea of soulmate, and he's critical of it. For much of the same reasons like a person today might be critical of some of the practical difficulties with it. But there was a play writer who's mentioned, I think he's mentioned in some of Aristotle's writings. But his name is Aristophanes, and he wrote his idea of the soulmate. It is probably better, the concept is translated as true friend.
I
Okay,
love that.
so it's like the true friend. The Greek word is andragathos. So andragathos, like, it's two words there. Andres is where we get like brother. Okay. So this concept means basically one soul dwelling in two places or two bodies. So in the Greek idea was that, and this goes into Greek mythology a little bit too, so take that as you will, but essentially the Greek idea was that human beings were these whole creatures at one point, and then the gods decided to split them in two. And so the soul got split in two. And in order for human beings to feel that love and wholeness again, like I'm a complete entity, they had to go find the second half of their soul. So there was a male and female component to the whole humanness. And so, of course, this isn't like Greek mythology, so the Greeks kind of debated this, but that was essentially the idea, is that the soul is somehow split, and I need to go find the piece of the soul where it is in the world. Now, Judaism also has this concept. It's a mixed bag in Judaism. When I say Judaism, I mean like rabbinic literature, both from the Second Temple period. This is like the centuries before Christ, and then especially later centuries in the AD period after Christ, the rabbinic literature, they're kind of all over the map on this idea. But essentially, the idea is that there's an ultimate connection with the creator. So like the soul, if you think about the word soul, in Hebrew, that comes from the word Nephesh, in the early in the Genesis creation account. So when it says God breathed into man the breath of life, and he became a living soul. The word there, the key word there, is nephesh.
For soul.
And so it's spirit, means spirit. And so, for the Hebrews, the ultimate source of where the soul longs to be reconnected is the Creator. So that's very first and primary, is like my soul longs to be reconnected and reabsorbed in with the Creator. Not
Love
like
that.
monism or like Hinduism, but like that's that my soul comes, my soul originates from the Creator. That's what it longs for. However, God looks down and says, it's not good that man be alone. And so he makes Eve from Adam. This is the creation account. So if you think about where did the Greeks get this idea of the soul being split? Well, think about the Genesis creation account. Eve is made from Adam. And Adam looks at her and says, bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. Okay. So he sees like she's of me and she's part of me. And the two become one flesh. So this isn't a cr like the Greeks weren't crazy, okay? They were misguided, they were living under false gods, okay? But it's not a crazy idea that the two become one. Okay, that's in the Bible. So the Jews, how they would make sense of this in terms of romantic relationships is that if they were some Jews were predeterminists, like predestinationists, some were not, but essentially a lot of the rabbinic literature would view this as like your first marriage. Like the first marriage is sort of what the person is intended to be, the soulmate. Like if a, like the predestinationist kind of rabbis would say, when a man is born, a decree goes out from heaven that the daughter of this other woman or a man is supposed to be his wife. And so, and then the two of them are supposed to marry and have children and all that stuff. But of course they know, like, people get divorced, people don't meet, people die, all kinds of things happen. And so there's remedies that need to be made. So they didn't have this like fatalistic or nihilistic notion that if I don't meet my soulmate, then I won't have meaning in life. They didn't have that. But it ultimately, like, soul comes from creator, so my soul longs to be connected, but the creator made a helper for me. And I need to be connected to my helper in this life too.
I love that, Tim. That's really cool.
Now the mystics, the Christian mystics, kind of pick this up later. Origen of Alexandria, he's a church father from the 3rd century. He's one of the earliest ones to talk about the soulmate concept. So again, evangelicals, if you're listening to this, this is not new and it's not crazy. Okay. Now Origen himself had some crazy ideas. Okay. We don't have to get into those, but he talked about the soulmate concept in relation to union with Christ. And so he was an allegorist. He would read the scriptures through an allegoric interpretation. I don't agree with that interpretive method, but so he's one of the first to take like Song of Solomon, which is a romance book, and equate it to one's union with Christ. And so the soul, just as a man leaves his father and his mother and cleaves to his wife, and the two become one flesh, so the soul will eventually want to leave this world and cleave to Christ and never be separated from Christ again. So yeah, same sort of concept. So yeah, like the Christians, the Jews wrestled with this concept all through the ages. They wrestled with this while dealing with the practical side of living in a fallen world with broken homes, broken marriages, death and disease, and all kinds of other things that might happen. Yeah, when we get to the secular age, this is where it gets interesting, and this is where we can maybe talk about like where we find ourselves now. And I want to hear some opinions that you have on this. I was listening to a sermon by Tim Keller many years ago. This is a phenomenal sermon. So if you want to go listen to it, it's called "The Struggle for Love." You can actually just look it up on YouTube, and you'll find it really easily. He it's a sermon on Jacob and Rachel and Leah. Okay, it's a sermon about that romance story in the Bible. It's a really good sermon. And interesting note, just side quest. Everyone, people tend to focus on Jacob and Rachel, like that, how Jacob falls in love with Rachel right away. And Tim Keller has a lot of, he kind of points out like that's actually, there's a lot of problems going on there. You got to go listen to the sermon to,
Okay, I'm gonna put
okay.
it up.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't realize, like, and my Old Testament professor, Ed Heinsohn, pointed this out when I was a freshman. He said, Jacob was so devoted to Rachel early on, but over time, Leah is the one who bears him the most children. And in the end, he chooses to be buried next to Leah.
Really?
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
didn't
Yeah.
notice that. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting, because Rachel dies much earlier in life, and Jacob continues on with Leah, and then he decides to be buried next to Leah. So anyway, that's an interesting tidbit in and of itself. But in the sermon, Keller, he cites this secular atheist, I think he's a philosopher, a sociologist named Ernest Becker. And Becker wrote this book called The Denial of Death. And it's all about secularists trying to grapple with meaning in life and finding solutions to this emptiness that they feel. See, the problem with secular society, like secularism being like a society that's devoid of religious commitments. Like a Christian society is a society that's inculcated and committed to the Christian religion, let's say. Secular society says we have no prior commitments. Okay. So a secular society where there's no religious commitments, it's secularism itself becomes the religion. And when that happens, society divorces the source of ultimate meaning. Like religion, the creator, the belief in God would provide people that sense of ultimate meaning and purpose and trajectory in their life. Well, when that goes away, people have to look for it somewhere else. They need to replace that with something else. And so Becker talks about this in his book, The Denial of Death. And he goes on to say that we have come to put an outsized emphasis on romance as the key driver in our marital relationships, whereas ancient cultures didn't do that. That romance still played a part. It was an important thing, but it wasn't the main driver of like my meaning and purpose in life is to find the one true love. But in modern society, because we live in a secular world where people are not compelled to have religious commitments, now they look for that meaning and purpose in the romantic partner or the quest for the romantic partner. So let me read you this quote,
Of
and then
feeling and emotion and
So
stuff.
I'm going to read you this quote, and then I'm going to kick it to you, okay? For just as we get into some practical things. But Becker says this. He says, "We still need," that's we secularists, "we still need to feel that our life in the scheme of things," oh, sorry, excuse me, let me back up. "We still need to feel that our life matters in the scheme of things. We still want to merge ourselves with some higher, self-absorbing meaning in trust and gratitude. But if we no longer have God, how are we to do this? One of the first ways that occurred to the modern person was the romantic solution. The self-glorification that we need in our inmost being, we now look for and the lover partner. What is it that we want when we elevate the lover partner to this position? We want to be rid of our faults. We want to be rid of our feeling of nothingness. We want to be justified. We want to know that our existence hasn't been in vain. We want redemption, nothing less." So Becker concludes that the modern quest of the secular person to find the soulmate is actually an inner quest for redemption.
I
And
love
that's
that.
where we find ourselves. And the problem, I think, is now because people are searching and groping for that soulmate, there's all kinds of people and groups that are willing to offer them a solution to that problem. And that means cults, like New Age cults. Or modern, like kind of secular cults like Twin Flames. That's one that's come up in recent years. Netflix just did a documentary on them where the soulmate is
That's
called
interesting.
the Twin Flame is the new title of soulmate that people are using. But yeah, so there's lots of groups that they are exploiting. They know, like charlatans and cult leaders know that people are yearning for this, and they will offer a solution to them. So again, evangelicals, don't be dismissive of people who are looking for this, because if you dismiss them, they just might run to the arms of someone who gives them a false hope and a false answer. So that's why we shouldn't be dismissive of people who are looking for this meaning in their life in that way. Okay, so all right, so I talked a lot.
I know you did.
That's the problem where we find ourselves is a lot of people believe in the soulmate. It's not a new idea, it's not crazy, it has a long history. It's connected to our sense of purpose and meaning in life. We live in a secular society that has divorced religion from life. And so people are looking to fill that hole with something else, and that looks to be the romantic partner.
Yeah.
So what does that do for relationships? What impact does it have on relationships? Maybe people in a relationship, but then younger people who are looking for their partner.
Yeah. I remember many years ago, I had a professor who said that he enjoyed listening to secular love songs. And you think of secular love songs today and you say, well, why? Like, what's the big deal with listening to those types of songs? And he says, it speaks to both the yearning of one's heart and also the pain of one's heart. Like, what one desires is also the source of pain. Everyone wants to be in a relationship. Everyone wants to have a soulmate. But the pain is that you're not finding what you're looking for. And I think this goes back kind of to that argument I was making earlier about, is it setting you up for a false expectation? And I guess it comes down to how you define soulmate. You've given a lot of great historical background to what it means and how it has this really significant connection to a relationship with God and a relationship with each other, because God created us for him and also for each other in marriage and that connection and also in community, right? But when you sit down and think about, I think maybe the misunderstanding has been how people define the one or the soulmate. And the way that I've seen it play out in culture is it's this person who perfectly matches you. So what does that mean from a practical standpoint? Oh, we have to be complementary in regards to our personalities. If I'm an extrovert, they need to be an introvert so we can complement that way. Or if I'm an INTJ, they need to be an ENTF or ENTP or something like that. So we're trying to find all these ways that to us demonstrate a oneness, a soulmate, the one, right? So I think it's going to come down to how do you define finding the one or what a soulmate is. And I think maybe you'll get to the illustration a little bit later, but this idea of, I think what I was looking at in scripture is this aspect of commitment. You'll appreciate this as I share. There's one philosopher, psychologist that created what's called the Sternberg's theory of love, three components of love. And he talks about these are the main components: intimacy, which is often the feelings of closeness, connectedness, and bondedness. The second one is passion, which are all feelings and desires that lead to physical attraction, romance, sexual consummation. And then decision and commitment, which involves feelings that lead a person to remain with someone and move toward shared goals. And I think, so what he says is, if you have these three, you have love. You have what's called the full love. And then he breaks it down a little bit more, and he starts talking about, well, what if you only have two of the three, right? Is that enough? So if you have intimacy and commitment, you have what he would say is companionate love. You have a companion for life, someone who's committed to you, who you have this deep emotional connection to, and you guys are also committed to each other. Like, you know that you're never going to leave each other. Then you have the other one. I think this is where most people land. It's the romantic love. This is the intimacy and the passion, but no commitment. So this is where you see people kind of dating and they get along well. They feel connected to each other. They have the passion. They feel attracted to each other, but the commitment is lacking. So this could be similar to maybe people who are living together before marriage. So something like that, right? And they may say commitment, but again, how do you solidify that? Usually through marriage, right? And then you have what's called fatuous love. And he would say this is the passion and the commitment, but no intimacy. So this is kind of those people who benefit each other by being attracted to each other, being committed to each other, but not really having any depth to their relationship. So what he would say is the full love, he would call consummate love, which is all three of those factors played together. So how do you build something like that? So the soulmate, at least in my mind, is the one of you becoming that person and building together with someone person, because these things don't happen on day one, right? So I think the idea of soulmate, at least from my perspective, the way that people see it is maybe that it happens on day one, like maybe a love at first sight type of feel.
Yeah, or I will know intuitively that this person can do all the things you just described.
Yes. Yeah. So something
I'll just
like that.
Know it.
They'll know. And they do talk about it with a lot of conviction. And to your point, I don't want to downplay that. I'm simply pointing out that these things take time. Like the love that you see your parents have, or your grandparents have, or a couple that you admire, like behind that story or behind that marriage, you see the story of struggle and forgiveness and pain and all of these things that we don't see because not a lot of people share. You know, and I think it'll benefit those of you who are listening, and if you are older and in the church and you know people look up to you, I think it would behoove you to share with others the struggles and the victories of why you are where you are today in your marriage. Because I think people will look at your marriage, they'll admire it, but they don't see the struggle behind it. And in order for them to know what it actually looks like to build that, they need to see part of the struggle. Because people would think that if there's a problem that goes wrong, then maybe this is not my soulmate anymore, right? They could go into the relationship believing this is my soulmate, but if something goes wrong or they go through a really tough patch, this person is no longer my soulmate. Maybe I messed up. Then there's a shame component that kind of comes up.
Yeah, because if we're running with the idea of soulmate, when problems arise, then I lose that sense of wholeness, of fulfillment, of meaning and purpose, of like almost like ultimate destiny kind of thing, like culmination. Yeah. If I've thought I found redemption in this person, and then now I'm encountering problems, what does that mean for my redemption? You know, if you want to get really deep with it, you know, yeah, that's.
And we do this in our relationship with God too, right? It's like, you know, I'm saved, I've been growing in my relationship with God, and then you go through a really hard time in your life, and then people start to question, does God really love me, right? So it kind of still ties back into the idea of wanting to feel connected to God, and often struggle pushes you towards God, and He becomes your source of comfort. But there's other people who now they question everything about God, like, oh, the Lord doesn't love me anymore. If He loved me, He wouldn't have allowed this to happen. Or, you know, why is God putting me through this? So they start questioning all those things. So that's my fear is that if you do, again, I'm not downplaying it, but if you do believe in this aspect of having a soulmate, it's going to be with the understanding that there's struggle within that aspect and that that's okay, that that's part of growing deeper in relationship. I've felt closer to God during my times of pain than during my times on a mountaintop, for
Yeah.
example. So I think if you have that understanding, the idea of a soulmate, you also have the understanding of there's a process to get to that point, that it solidifies with time because you have these components of intimacy, passion, and commitment. And the Bible would often talk about this as this covenantal love, right? You're bound by this covenant to commit and love this other person. You know, we have it in Ephesians 5, and obviously talking about the covenant in the Old Testament that God keeps with his people.
Yeah, you know, speaking of the Bible, so I'm glad you mentioned that. So the Bible, you know, immediately when we evangelicals might hear this and they about the idea of the soulmate, and they think, well, the Bible says nothing about it, you know, and I'm going to dismiss it. We just talked about the creation account and where even
All
Greek
great things.
philosophers got the idea of the split soul. But even just the idea of marriage in the Bible. Now, the Bible's not, I and I it doesn't paint an idealistic, like always rosy picture of marriage, but I would say this is my words, it paints a realistic or a realist, as in a realist is someone. Now, let me back up here. Sorry, let me go forward and then I'll back up.
Sure.
But the Bible gives us a realist but positive view of romance and marriage. Now, what do I mean by realist? Sometimes in common vernacular, people will be like, I'm not a pessimist, I'm a realist. You know, and that what they mean by that is I want an excuse to complain about something. What I mean by realist is that you deal with the world, you're dealing honestly with the problems of the world. So a realist is not an idealist, but is also not a cynical pessimist. Okay. So a realist is someone who just sees there's both good and bad in the world. So the Bible takes a realist view of marriage, but on top of that, it has a positive view of marriage and romance, not just marriage, but romance. Okay. So Song of Solomon is
Song of
probably the
Solomon.
best example of that. But you know, there's those positive stories. Isaac and Rebecca is a positive story of romance and marriage. Now, were there problems? Oh yeah, of course. Ruth and Boaz is another positive story of romance in the Bible. But there's also cautionary tales like Samson and Delilah. Now, some people are like, Samson never got married to Delilah. Yeah.
I love his expression.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. There's another, here's one. King Ahab. Okay, King Ahab, who did he marry? Jezebel. King Ahab is described as the most wicked king in all of Israel's history, and the most evil thing that he did was marry Jezebel. Okay, so that's bad. All right. So there's right and wrong ways to do that. You remember Jacob? Okay, so Jacob, people will focus on his romance with Rachel, how he sees Rachel at the well, and he's just absolutely
Love at
overcome and
first
smitten.
sight,
Yeah,
yeah.
and he kisses her and he weeps, and we're like, oh, how sweet. That's so romantic. And then he goes and he offers Laban, I'll work 7 years. Tim Keller really does a good job of going into why this is a problem, because what it shows is that Jacob is he's doing this thing where he's trying to make up for his sense of alienation and abandonment by finding love in Rachel, because he's already has his experience with the angel of the Lord, where he wrestles. He's already had that experience, and he's already cheated. Well, maybe I'm getting my time. He's at least cheated Esau. He's cheated Esau out of his birthright. I may be getting the other experience mixed up, but he's cheated Esau out of his birthright. So he's gotten like this guarantee: I'm gonna get the birthright of my father. But he's fleeing from his family. And he flees to his uncle's house. Okay, and that's where he meets Rachel. And then he's so desperate and enamored with love, overcome with this love, that he offers 7 years of labor, which like is crazy. No one would have done that. That's why the story.
I thought that was cultural in some ways.
Yeah, no, it's an exorbitant amount of
Interesting.
yeah. So it's like Laban's like, sure,
I'll take
yeah. You
it,
know. So he does that. And then at the end of the 7 years, Keller explains us that when Jacob says, like, it's the end of my 7 years, give me my wife so that I can lay with her, that was very uncouth culturally to do that. He's basically saying, okay, I've earned my wife, now let me have sex with her. So he's so desperate to fulfill the physical desire that he has for her. So he just sees this as like, I've just got to have this woman. Okay. And Laban, of course, takes advantage of him, in that way. Anyway, so there's all that to say, there are positive views of marriage and romance, but there's also warnings in the Bible too. Like Solomon, the Song of Solomon is about Solomon and his young bride, but we all know Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Yeah. So, yeah. And those wives led him away from the Lord. Yeah. So it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag. So, okay. What advice can we give? Oh, let me say one more thing about the Bible, because I didn't say anything about the New Testament. Like the New Testament picture, I think you mentioned this earlier. The New Testament picture of marriage is that one, it's a healthy thing for people to do. It's not an obligation. You could be single or married and live a fulfilled Christian life. But if you do get married, that is a picture of the union with Christ. This is Ephesians 5. Like the marriage, your marriage with your husband or wife is supposed to be a picture of that Christ union with the church. Okay. So that's the biblical picture of marriage in a nutshell. All right. So what do we give? In our audience, there's going to be Christians who are wrestling with this idea of soulmate. There's going to be maybe people who are not Christians wrestling with it. What advice can we give them? Or even people who are married and maybe thinking, did I choose wrong?
Yeah,
Yeah.
well, I really like the point you made earlier. This was prior to us starting the episode, but this aspect of building a life together. And I think the Sternberg's theory of love, I think it actually provides a good foundation for approaching relationships. As you know, we talked about Christians will often negate the aspect of physical attraction, but it's a natural part of how we actually build relationships. It's one of the main components. It's what actually brings us in for men. So there's that aspect. But then the other two, right? This aspect of intimacy, learning how to build that intimacy, that genuine connection, heart to heart, mind to mind with another person. Today, people don't know how to do that. And again, a lot of that stems from not having good models growing up. I mean, we have a lot of single family homes. We have a lot of divorced homes. We have a lot of absent parents. Kids just, the new generation just doesn't know. how to build a relationship face to face, an actual relationship. All they know is what they've seen in their homes and social media, what they're seeing these celebrities. And again, they only see the highlights on social media. If you're scrolling, you're not seeing all the lows of people's relationship. You're seeing only the highs. So in your mind, that's creating this ideal of, oh, that's what I want my relationship to look like, or that's what I want this to look like. But again, spend time with couples within your church, within your communities that you admire, and ask questions. I think most couples like to share, hey, here's what we've been through. Here's how we overcame this struggle over here. So if you're single and looking to get married at some point, talk to those people. Talk to people that you admire. What you want your marriage to look like, talk to those people and they'll share those things with you. But this aspect, today we lose these two pieces in culture. The ability to build intimacy, which is genuine connection with another person, and the commitment piece is that if I'm not happy, then I can go and just leave this marriage. So everyone that's pretty good with the passion part, I'm attracted to you, you're attracted to me, great. But then after that, what? Build up the intimacy, build up the commitment, and needing it to get back to those roots. And I think there's a lot of support in scripture that provides that, right? We talk about the covenantal commitment of marriage, and then also we have guidance in reflecting the relationship of Christ and the church through marriage too.
Yeah, if I could maybe sum up that, what you said there, is that we don't necessarily find a soulmate, but we become
That's
soulmates
exactly right.
through the commitment and hard work. Like there's a, if you don't believe me, there's a stat here that's I think is interesting, you know, for people who are maybe struggling with the idea of like soulmate. 43% of people who get married end up marrying someone that they went to high school or college with. Yeah,
43%?
43%. This is
Really?
Americans. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. If the idea of soulmate, of like, I have to find there's one human being out there of the opposite sex that I need to find. Now, that's a controversial statement that I just uttered there, you know, in our culture, but that there's one person that I need to connect with in this romantic relationship, and that's my soulmate. You wouldn't see a stat like that. You wouldn't see, like, if, like 40, the distribution of soulmates is so closely, like in so close in physical proximity to each other that wouldn't make sense, you know. So the idea that we can become soulmates with another person through those stages and moving through the thresholds and trials of relationships, I think makes a lot more sense. I would say this as a, you know, as a single person, I'll give some self-disclosure here. Again, like I want to, I entered this episode not wanting to be presumptuous and give advice of from a vantage point that I didn't have, like being married or have kids or anything like that. But as a single person, there are times, especially as I've gotten older, there's been these pockets of discouragement that I've gone through where I start to ask questions like, did I, because I want to be married, you know, it's like, did I miss her? Like, did I miss that up? Did I overlook her? Did I miss my opportunity? I haven't found her yet. You know, that's that idea coming out. Subconsciously and then verbally, you know, sometimes. And I think for singles who struggle with that, the idea that we can actually build soulmates. Like you can actually find that connection, not with anyone. And this is again, evangelicals who are looking at this from the advantage point of being married, don't just say, well, just get married. That's not how
That's not
relationships
how,
work, okay? It's not that you can just connect with anyone, but there is a maybe a range of people who could become that quote unquote soulmate, you know, if you build a relationship together. And I think there's some freedom and encouragement for singles who are kind of wandering in the dark, so to speak, on this issue. It's like, I can't find the person. Maybe I missed her. Maybe I missed him. Maybe I broke up with them and I'm regretting it now or whatever. And I've made huge mistakes in my life that can't be redeemed. I think the idea that I can build a relationship with another person and be like, that meets some qualification, some basic qualifications, you know, that we've talked about. But I can become that and I can find that connection. that way. I think there's some freedom in that and encouragement for people. So I would just encourage singles in that, yeah, there could be multiple people who could qualify for that kind of partner in your life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I appreciate sharing that, brother. Appreciate sharing that. It's a good topic.
Yeah.
Good discussion.
I have some closing thoughts.
You have some closing
I have
thoughts?
one closing thought.
Okay.
Okay. But I'll let you go first. You go first.
Yeah, I think if I have any closing thoughts on the topic, it's just re-emphasizing the idea of becoming the person, becoming the soulmate, I guess, and then finding someone who is also doing that in their own journey. I don't know what that looks like though, because I'm still processing just the idea of what a soulmate actually is, because I guess I'm coming at it from the perspective of maybe even from a place of hurt, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm still processing the whole idea of it. But for me, it's more so if I'm looking forward and looking at what this actually means, I think it's just finding someone who's willing to build together and working through things and just pushing forward. That's just kind of what's coming to mind for me.
Yeah. I would close with this, that there's deep wisdom in Western tradition, at least, on this thought of a soulmate. Now again, we've unpacked it and critiqued it, but there's still wisdom in the idea. So again, it's not new, it's not crazy, because the idea itself speaks to this permanent and abiding sense of joy, wholeness, and redemption that we all long for, and with that we all seek. I didn't mention anything about Eastern philosophy as I was going through this topic, because Eastern philosophy—that's Confucianism, Buddhism, some Japanese philosophy. Yeah, these Eastern philosophy largely denies the existence of this kind of connection or
They
love,
do.
because well, especially with like Buddhism,
Yeah.
the purpose of life is to detach yourself from these affections and these desires, because that's where
Yeah.
suffering comes from, is
That's a good
attachment.
point. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the more you attach yourself to things that, like these loves, the more suffering you actually have in life. And so you ultimately have to come to a place where you recognize that your own non-existence is what is reality.
Yeah,
And so that's when
yeah.
you can be subsumed back into the nothingness.
That's
Yeah.
interesting.
And so
Interesting.
so that it actually, like, these desires that you have would say, well, they're just there. You actually have to see them as nothing. They're not real. And the Christian worldview would say that's not true. Okay. That there is it these deep desires within us, including the desire for a soulmate, even if it could be misplaced or misidentified or ill-defined, does point to something. And C.S. Lewis had a lot to say on this. He had this famous argument called the argument from desire. It was actually an apologetic argument for the existence of God. And it goes something like this. I'll abbreviate it, but basically, C.S. Lewis, when he's writing, he says, "I have an appetite that can be satisfied. All my appetites can be satisfied by something. I have an appetite for food. There's food in this world. I have thirst. I can have my thirst quenched by something in this world, water or whatever. I have an appetite for sex that could be satisfied in this world. All these appetites that I have, there's something in this world that can satisfy that appetite or desire, let's say." He says, "But there's something much deeper in the human soul. There's some desire that we all know can't be fulfilled in this life. There's nothing in this life that can fulfill that desire. But why would I have that desire if nothing in this life can fulfill it? Where would that desire come from?" You can see where he's going with this. So he says, if all of my desires or appetites have some sort of way to be fulfilled, then it stands to reason that this other desire in me, this deeper one that longs for a transcendent connection, is something that points beyond this world. And I have to look outside of this world and outside of physical existence to find what could fulfill that desire. And I think that's where we get this idea of redemption and where soulmate actually comes from. Yeah.
That's great. I love that, Tim. Hey, I'll close with this because now it came to mind because you mentioned Eastern tradition and so on. I think culturally, I think that's probably what's been impacted in my head because the focus from a culture perspective, Latino background, is duty, responsibility, commitment, no matter what. And to the detriment of some relationships within the Latino community, but I think that's kind of the idea of do these three things, that's your responsibility. And the feelings are kind of taken out of it. So maybe it's been that aspect of what does it make me feel to think about this romantic piece part of it? Well, it doesn't line up with these other factors that were modeled or taught to me growing up because these were the most important. So when I talk about the covenantal part of marriage, I'm thinking that ties into this commitment piece. So yeah, I think that's where I was trying to come from is that what is it? What it's not wanting to feel romantic. It's just these are of higher value based on the background. The Eastern one is tricky because it's kind of detach yourself completely from those emotions. So I guess that's what clicked in my head. Oh, that makes sense. That's how I grew up. Okay. I need to
What
modify that a
sound?
little
Yeah,
bit.
and we could probably do some episodes on like cultural differences with like happiness, the place of feelings and
I
happiness
love that.
in
Yeah.
different cultures.
That'd be good.
But it sounds like with the Latin American culture, it's not that feelings aren't important, but they're lower on the scale of
They're lower.
values.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's a good
Yeah.
point. So, yeah,
Okay.
great stuff.
All right.
Yeah, great. Share this with your friends. I'm sure you will love it. And send us your questions if you have anything.
All right.
All right. See you next time, guys.